Thanks for joining for today's episode. Today we got Chris Wormley in the studio. Chris is an 8-year NFL veteran playing defensive line. His senior season as a Michigan Wolverine, he was voted team captain, something that he was very, very proud of. He was a Big Ten All-Conference and a second-team All-American and went on to be drafted 74th in the 2017 NFL Draft. Chris has always had a fascination with real estate. He had an internship while playing football at Michigan that where he would go and learn about investing properties and go along with a broker. And so he's always been fascinated by real estate. I was fortunate enough to get to know Chris right around when he picked up his first rental about a half decade ago. And today he's at 13 apartment units. He's excited by the fact that he has already found his next passion prior to hanging up the cleats, which it seems like so many athletes struggle to find that passion. So it was great having Chris in the studio. I think you guys are all going to really enjoy this episode. Thank you for joining us. All right, thanks for joining us, everybody. We got Chris Wormley on the podcast today. Chris, thanks for coming on. I know you had a 5-6 hour drive from Michigan to get over here to Wisconsin, but man, I appreciate it. Chris from Toledo, and somehow Michigan stole him from Ohio State, and he played football at Michigan, and now he's played. You're going on your 9th year in the NFL.
Year 9.
And then you've also got some investing rocking and rolling. So excited to have you on the podcast, man.
No, yeah, I mean, it was a 5.5 hour drive, well worth it. Kind of want to give you your flowers a little bit right now. I've been following you for a while, and we were talking before the pod started that you're just like a real one. Mm-hmm. Like, you aren't, there's no fluff with you. No. You kind of say how it is, and I can appreciate that being a football guy.
Yep.
In the locker room and on the field, there's no room for that type of stuff.
Yeah, people usually know where they stand with me too, around the office or whatever. I kind of put it out there like it is, just like I do on social media. And there's no fluff. Doesn't need to be any fluff. You just kind of get straight to the point and everything. So, what was it like leaving? I know we'll talk a little bit of football, but then want to get into your investing stuff as well. Mm-hmm. What was it like leaving Toledo? Did any? I mean, I guess I didn't realize until we went out to eat before this that Toledo's only 45 minutes from University of Michigan. So you always liked Michigan growing up. I was just thinking like, okay, if you're from Ohio and you leave, Ohio State country and go to Michigan, that people might hate you in the area. But it sounded like that whole area in Toledo is more like Fallmore, Michigan, or is it kind of 50-50?
Yeah, I'd say it's like 50-50. So there was like a small war back in the 1800s.
Oh, that's
like the
right.
Battle of Toledo.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Ohio, right. The state of Ohio versus the state of Michigan, and somehow Ohio won. I don't think there were really even any deaths involved in this war.
And that's how Toledo fell to
and
that
that's how Toledo fell to Ohio. But I grew up right on the border, my street dead end into a golf course, and that golf course was Michigan. But, gotcha. 100 yards south was Ohio, and grew up in Toledo, Ohio, but it was about 50-50. So I had a lot of people that loved that I went to Michigan and a lot of people that wish I would have went to Ohio State.
How'd you get into the investing thing? Were you a business major?
No, I went to Michigan as like a movement science.
Yeah, wanted to play football.
Wanted to be Cardale Jones of Ohio State. He's like, I didn't go to school to play football. I came to school to play football or something like that. But I wanted to be a physical therapist.
Okay.
And that first semester, I was coming off of an ACL injury. 2 weeks into camp, I tore my ACL. And I was taking a lot of science classes that my brain wasn't fully prepared for. My Toledo high school education didn't prepare me for Michigan's crazy academic schedule. Didn't fail out or anything, but didn't have the correct grades to continue on. And I was like, okay, if I want to take this football thing seriously, biology and chemistry were not going to be in the cards for me. So I switched to sport management, which is,
there you go.
A lot of football guys dive into that. But I thought it was great. It was basically a business degree, but in terms of everything was more sport focused. I wanted to be like a sports administrator, athletic director, kind of early on. But something about real estate kind of really caught my eye.
When did you realize you were going to, when did you realize that you were going to make it in the NFL? Was it earlier in your career, mid-career? Was it really, really late?
I would say later than most people probably. I tore my ACL my freshman year, redshirted. And then those 2 years after, I played a little bit, but was never really in the starting lineup. Our head coach, Brady Hoke, gets fired after my third year, my redshirt sophomore year. And they bring in Jim Harbaugh. And if you've talked to anybody that knows Jim Harbaugh, he's looking to weed out people that aren't his recruits.
Seems like that.
And I was talking with Josh Johnson, who's the backup for the Baltimore this year, and he was like, "Man, even back when he became the head coach in San Diego, at the University of San Diego, he was trying to weed out anybody that wasn't recruited by him." And we had 4-hour spring ball practices. Camp was hard. You know, harder than most football is. You know, football is going to be hard no matter what. Yep. And a lot of us, including myself, I was contemplating like, damn, like is football for me? Like, am I really built for this? Like,
what was he making you guys do?
It was just like the grueling aspect of like being out there for 4 hours for spring ball.
Yeah.
And they called it roulette back in the day, and it was like 20 plays straight. And like Big Ten football is you're smashing. So
it's like 2 minute drill, but where it's just that type
of
tempo.
It wasn't like tempo, but it was like 20 plays straight.
With
like,
no subs?
With no subs.
Okay, got it. So like, just line it up and play.
It's almost right. like
that's a long drive. I mean, that's a long
like testing your character, yeah, testing your will.
It doesn't have to be a 2 minute drill tempo to be for 20 straight plays.
No, when you're banging, it's the same same double team run play 10 times in a row. You're feeling it. Yeah. So it really tested not just myself, but my roommates and my teammates' will to play the game. And obviously came out the other side. But
well, his mindset coming in there, you know, obviously he had to turn the program around a little bit, right?
Yeah.
When he probably did that everywhere he's gone. And when he's recruiting his recruit, he probably knows that he's probably recruiting not only talent, but he's probably recruiting a certain character too.
For sure.
So since he didn't necessarily recruit some of you guys, he's probably like, all right, well, let's see who's got my type of grit, my type of character.
Yeah, and there were a lot of guys that dropped like flies.
What percentage?
I would say 15 to 20%, which is a good chunk of guys. Yeah, that's
scholarship type guys, right?
That could be 20 to 30 guys during spring ball, and then some guys drop during camp. A lot of guys transferred, and it's like, you know, the strong will survive.
Yeah.
And so after that first spring ball with Harbaugh into camp, into that season, I had a pretty good season, and people were asking me, like, hey, you gonna leave for the NFL? And I'm like, I don't know.
At that point, you would have been leaving early.
Yeah. I would have been a fourth-year senior. That's right. But I would have had an extra year because I redshirted. And people were just asking, like, hey, you think you're leaving? And I had reporters asking me, because I had a pretty good year. I think I was like third team all Big Ten.
You were a captain, right?
That was the following year. Okay. And I wanted to get my degree. I kind of had this is before NIL and, you know, people being able to kind of do what they want in the transfer portal. I wanted to get my degree from Michigan, which is, you know, a pretty prestigious university.
I hear it from my wife all the time.
She's smart, man. She knows what she's talking about. Go Blue. But also, like, I wanted to, you know, I'd never beaten Ohio State, so that was one of my goals. I wanted to win Big Ten Championship. Yeah. These were all these things that I still had to check off that I wanted to do. So I ultimately came back. And I guess then I kind of knew that I was going to go to the NFL. I think I was like a late round. I would have been a late round projection that fourth year, but then came back and had an even better year.
Well, it's pretty sweet that you made it through Jim's chop down.
Yeah,
and then you become a captain out of that. The other guys that were captains with you, were they new recruits that he had brought in by then, or were they other guys that you were there with?
No, it was a guy named Jake Butt. He was he's a kid from Columbus, another Ohio kid.
So was he there before?
Yeah, he came Jim in with Coach Hoke as well.
Okay.
But like I said, we were one of the few that stayed and obviously made an impact on Jim because, I mean, he honestly could have told us, like, hey, like, I want you to transfer. Like, we don't have a spot for you here.
For sure.
So we felt like we, you know, showed our worth.
Yeah.
And the team voted on us to be captains. And that, I mean, to this day, it was one of the most honorable things that I've ever gotten was, you know, voted on by your teammates to be a captain at Michigan.
Sure. Yep. So you're going through your career, and I guess I don't know what it's like in the Division I type locker room, but I, you know, knowing that it comes with some ego and stuff like that, there's a lot of guys walking around probably that think, okay, I'm going to the NFL, and a lot of guys don't make it, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, what your mindset, I mean, it just sounds like you kind of already answered the question where your mindset was you really wanted to get the degree because you didn't necessarily know for sure you knew nothing was guaranteed after that, right? So, but did you also see, and we'll get into some of your investing stuff coming up, but did you also see yourself having an interest back then in wanting to invest in real estate?
Yeah, I just didn't have the capital.
Okay, so you were interested in doing it.
I started reading books. I actually interned the summer before my last year. I interned at a property management company that manages one of my properties in Ann Arbor, Michigan now, and got to, you know, see that the management side of things, how things were run, got to, you know, run some deals with the broker that you know owns the management company there. So that was my first real taste of like diving into real estate, other than just YouTube, Instagram, reading books, was actually having an internship for the summer that kind of showed me the inside of what that looked like.
So what your internship entailed, what were you typically doing on day to day?
Going to properties with the crew, with the property manager.
Properties that they were managing or selling?
Yeah, managing. Yeah. I mean, a little bit of both. It was managing what they were selling. We would meet investors out there that were looking at potentially buying a place. So it was, I mean, it was a full service management company that kind of did a little bit of everything that I got to see bits and parts. And that was,
man, being a captain and stuff, you did probably miss out on some NIL, and being a captain at Michigan, you probably did miss out on some NIL.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about that. I mean, instead of, you know, I'd probably have a few more units now than I do now.
But, I don't know I mean, I would think you would at least, I mean, being a captain and stuff, a couple $100,000 or something.
Yeah. Just knowing what the guys are getting paid now.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously that was like almost 10 years ago now, so, you know.
And that money getting to put to work back then too.
Yeah.
You know?
It would have compounded over time now.
I might have been able to retire from football a little sooner.
So frowned upon to even take like an extra, anything at that point in time, right? I mean, you probably shouldn't even take a free meal from somewhere,
no,
right?
No, I mean, I'm not going to get in trouble for this, but so another Harbaugh thing. We played in the Citrus Bowl in Orlando. We just beaten Florida like 41-7.
Yeah.
We're on the bus going to the airport and we get this mass text that's like, hey, don't plan anything for spring ball or for spring break. Like I'm going to the Bahamas. Like I already had this trip planned out with my one roommate and a buddy that lives in Fort Lauderdale. We're going to go catch lobsters in the Bahamas. Get this text. I'm like, what's going on? He sends us all down for a week to IMG, that like massive high school down south of Tampa. And we do spring ball there and like it's another like 4-hour practice. Yeah. And like this is supposed to be my last spring break as a college kid. I'm trying to have a little fun before I get serious for my last year. And the last day we have like a beach day and like a couple of us like walk a mile or so down the road to find like this little shack. And we're ordering burgers and fries, get a couple beers. And this guy like slips me a 20 and he's like, hey, go blue. And I'm like, can I take this? Like
crazy.
Like put it in my pocket real fast.
And I'm like, crazy.
And I was like sweating, like, is this like a joke? Is somebody like trying to set us up? Cause you know, some type of violations or whatever. And I'm like,
oh my God.
And it was like, the tab was like $100, you know, like, so it didn't even put a dent really into like what our tab was, but like the $20 back then. And now these guys are driving. I go to Michigan spring practice and in the parking lot of the facility, they got Range Rovers and the new Hellcats. And I'm like, my first car that I drove at Michigan for 3 years was a 2001 green PT Cruiser.
There you go.
And I mean,
those things would bump though. my buddy, one of the running backs in the room had a PT Cruiser, and that thing had like, I think it was, maybe he had some subs in the back or something. I thought it was just a standard speakers. I'm like, wow, this thing is like, we had the Carter 3 on at the point. At that point in time, that thing would just go crazy.
I had bought it from an older black guy, and he had it like decked out with like chrome wheels, and like everything was like chrome. It had like this weird visor on it, but it was like, I mean, it served its purpose. But if I'm driving a PT Cruiser now on the NIL day, like,
right?
I mean, maybe I would have just rolled that money into an investment instead of spending it on a dumb car. But
it's got to be someone doing that over there,
yeah.
Unless the car is just given to them,
yeah.
But that's crazy how much that whole thing's evolved to, you know, you having to think about, okay, there's this $20 bill. I mean, and the thing is like, yeah, but you get free school. I'm like, okay, well, free school. I mean, it's not necessarily paying my rent.
Well, I mean, most guys are getting general studies degrees, you know, like, is it really worth it?
Right.
I mean,
right.
It is. It is where you get a college degree. It's free.
Not compared to all the money that Michigan's making selling tickets your guys' 100%. Games on Saturday.
And I'll give them a lot of credit. They've been pretty open about like paying the players and supporting the players in a way that I know it.
The current players you're saying?
Now it's fun to see like that evolution of NIL and how those kids are taken care of. And now there's revenue sharing if the school wants to participate and they do. So it's that evolution over the last, you know, 3-4 years has been pretty fun to, as a spectator, it's a little jealous, a little envious.
Yeah.
But to see those guys get compensated, it's been pretty cool.
So then you go and were you drafted or were you?
Yeah, drafted. Drafted right. Third round, pick number 74 to the Baltimore Ravens.
When you signed your first contract, what was going through your mind with your first contract? I don't know the dollar amount.
I think my signing bonus after taxes was like 690 grand.
Yep. So you leave Michigan where you're wondering, okay, can I take this $20 bill or not? Yeah. I really want to take the $20. Now you get all of a sudden the next day you're probably getting $690 in your bank account.
Yeah, right? I think the most I ever had in my account at one time was like $2,000. Yeah. That was my Pell Grant hit at the beginning of the semester.
Yep.
So like that type of money I'd never seen. And
so what was your mindset? Because I think there's a lot of guys that are kind of all over the spectrum on what their mindset is. Where like some guys $690, they're gonna go buy two cars right away potentially, right? Or like, but then some other guys are gonna invest it. Some other guys are just gonna sit on it. Some other guys are gonna they're givers and they're gonna give some away. What was your mindset and how did you kind of treat that first money that you ended up getting?
Yeah, I sat on it honestly. I mean, I bought my mom a house, my brother and sister. I bought my now wife, she's my high school sweetheart. We got engaged like 2 months after I got drafted. Mm. So it's wedding a good ring. Investment. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we were talking at lunch. She's the best.
Yep.
And just her support over these last really 16 years has been pretty cool. So mom,
you met
house,
her in high school or you?
Yeah. High school. High school. Yep. Okay. We were both from Toledo.
Okay.
Did she end up going to Michigan too?
No, she went to University of Toledo, which is only 45 minutes.
That's not
bad. And then she went out to LA for fashion school.
Sure.
Oh, cool.
So that we played long distance for a couple years there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, really sad. I mean, besides the wedding and my mom's house and a wedding ring, I really sat on the money.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And now looking back, I'm like, dang, I wish I would have invested it a little sooner until I bought my first property after my third year.
Okay. So you were a little ways after that.
So
then
I waited,
So then obviously not only your signing bonus, by the time you hit your third year, you have more money rolling. So that whole time you just kind of kept stacking it up.
Yeah. Yep.
Were you also then, what were you simultaneously doing between stacking it up? Cause now, what was the catalyst then that got you to go from, okay, it's been 3 years, now let's buy the first property. Were you investing in other things at the point in time?
Yeah, I had a financial advisor
that
I had since my second year. And we had been investing, just trying to learn the stock market and stocks and bonds and what it all means and all that fun stuff. And then my the broker that owns the management company that I interned with gave me a call and said, hey, I know we've been talking the last couple of years. This was right when COVID hit, really. I think I closed on it in like April of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
He called me and said, hey, I got this off-market deal. One of our investors that we already managed, this house, are you interested in buying it? I didn't even see the place because it was COVID. I was living in Baltimore at the time. Ann Arbor, is a pretty liberal place that everything was locked down for a while. So couldn't even see the place, didn't even tour it. But I put a lot of trust in Jay Keller Properties. Shout out to John Keller, the owner there. It's been performing.
That was a single family?
It was a duplex.
A
duplex right across the street from the big house in Ann Arbor, Michigan Stadium. And it's been a great asset.
So at that point, what made you because you're at 15 doors now,
mm-hmm.
15 units. So at that point in time, you pull the trigger on that first one. What made you then want to get more?
I always knew that I wanted to get into real estate ever since. I mean, even looking on Zillow as a kid, then into the internship and then obviously buying my first one. I just saw the tax implications of it, what that could do for me. I felt like it was a good place to hold my money other than just keeping everything in the stock market or in a savings account, earning 0.01%. I like the diversification of it all when it comes to what I have, stocks and bonds, obviously. But now, like, this real estate thing's really been, like, the main focus of mine in the last 4 years, 5 years now. For me, I like to see what I own. I can't see. It's just a number on my phone. Which I don't know if that makes sense.
What do you mean it's a number on your phone?
Like my bank account is just like a number.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
My brokerage account is just a number to me. I know it's money, but I don't have like a stack of cash just in my bedroom.
Yep.
But I could drive down the street from where I live now and see this duplex.
Yep.
I can see people living in there. I can see the places I have in Toledo, Ohio. I could see it. If I wanted, I could feel it.
Yep.
It's like it's like a tangible thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's for me. Like, that's how I see, like, okay, this is what I want to do. And this is one of the reasons why.
What's it like owning real estate or being a landlord while playing professional sports?
It can be tough at times, especially in season. Like, I've had water breaks. I have a management team that handles a lot of the stuff, but a lot of the bigger things, they come to me and they say, hey, are we cleared to spend this amount on X, Y, and Z?
Mm-hmm.
We just had one of the basements, bottom basement units flood in Toledo. There was a lot of rain this past week, and I have to wait for the for everything to drain out and dry to see what the damage is. And I'm waiting on a number for that to give them the A-OK to yep. hopefully not have to replace a lot of stuff. So it's stressful, but at the same time, like, this is what I like to do. I like we talked about the operational side of things. It's fun,
yeah.
but it's enjoyable. I like it.
How do you see it changing from the way it is now versus maybe when you're retired, and what do you see that's going to be different with the operation that you've got going?
I think if and when I retire, and then if I decide to take it over myself and be the main landlord and have my own property management company, I think I'm just going to care more.
Yeah.
Like I'm going to, you know, I have 15 or 13 units with this company in Toledo, and they're like, are they going to care more for my 13 units, or are they going to care more for somebody who has 200 units?
Yeah.
And that's just like a business thing for them.
For sure.
So I understand in their aspect, if they're going to be a little slower to take my call versus someone else's that has, you know, 5% of the business.
Yeah. Represents a bigger part.
So I just think that when I get in there, I'm going to care more. I'm going to have a closer eye on things. And take things to a different height than they'd be able to if it was, you know, if I just stayed with them.
Yeah.
And then they do a fine job. Like I cash flow every month.
Yep.
They handle all the headaches of clogged toilets and bad tenants. So I give them a lot of props, but I know when it's all said and done, I can do a better job just because I care more.
For sure. They're your properties. What are your ultimate goals with business, and where do you see yourself going, and what do you really want out of it long term?
I think everybody talks about like financial freedom, and that's just like a time thing, you know. Mm-hmm. I've given so much time to football over these last, I mean, really since I've been 9, but now I got a wife and 2 kids mm-hmm. that like my oldest daughter kind of understands why I'm gone for 4 or 5 months out of the year.
Yeah,
my youngest one just is happy to see dad when she wakes up out of her crib, you know. Right. So it's the time aspect that, you know, you can never really get back time.
Yep.
And that's what I'm really chasing is to get that time back. And, you know, you talk about the private jets, like, why not, you know? But it takes time. It takes the right investments. It takes having a good head on your shoulders.
Sure.
So, yeah, I'm looking for that freedom of time that I've been, you know, hunkered down for the last, you know, I mean, 15 years really since high school. Of pursuing this football dream.
Yep. Yeah, you cannot, I could care less of, my wife and I were talking about this last night, actually. We kind of had a little bit of a planning thing last night, and we were talking, and we were both like, man, neither of us care about, like, the stuff, really. We just really don't care about the stuff, but we care about the time,
mm-hmm.
and we're deciding kind of, like, what we want to do with our house. Do we want to buy this other house
right.
or not? And it's not necessarily about the other house, but it's about, we're like, this other house would kind of be a step up. But what it would allow us to do is have a pool. I was kind of sharing this with you.
Mm-hmm.
It would allow us to have a pool, which at our current house, because of how we're kind of landlocked, we can't really get a pool in due to some liberal laws and stuff like that. We don't need to get into it. But so for us, it's not necessarily about like a bigger house or more stuff in the house or whatever. It's all about like the memories, the time and all that, and the experiences with like our kids, their friends, you know, our friends. And like the private jet thing, I mean, we had a situation this last summer where basically we were going to have 2 days cut off of vacation, again, for details I'm not going to get into on the show, but instead I'm just like, you know what? Nope. We're $40,000 private jet. Right. And we had the jet took us out there. Then the jet had to come back by itself. Then the jet had to come back by itself to get us a week later. Then it could, so it's 40 grand. But the way I look at it is I'm not going to be able to get those two days back with my daughter. She's, you know, 12, right? And we have split custody. So really we have her 50% of the time, right? So really before she goes to college, we really have 3 years left with her, not 6.
Right.
Right. So I'm like, if I can trade $40,000, if I'm in a good enough position or a fortunate enough position to be able to trade $40,000 for 2 extra days on our summer trip, I'm going to do that every single time. So that's also what it means to me is like, you know, not having to be, you know, being able to have that option to be able to, again, if I can trade money for time, for experiences with my family and loved ones, that's what the whole thing's about with me too. And I want to be able to do it like whenever, however, like whatever I want to do and when I want to do it with who I want to do it. That's kind of like that's kind of my version of freedom. Mm-hmm. So,
and you can make that 40,000 back. You can't get those 2 days back.
Right. Yeah. You can't get the time back. You can make the 40 again. You can make the 40 again. And ideally you're making, ideally you have, again, you build up your cash flow where that's coming in and you spend your cash flow. I teach my daughter, I'm like, look,
So any money that my daughter, so this is maybe something you can do with your daughters if you want to teach them. Because again, like when you're in a situation where you're blessed financially, right? Like, you know, and you're in a good spot. I also don't want my kids to like be spoiled brats. So,
sure. Yeah.
So like with my daughter, and we'll do the same thing with Crew. Any money she gets, I don't care if it's birthday, I don't care if she finds it on the street, I don't care. She knows that 50% of it gets set aside because she has to invest it. 50% she can spend on whatever she wants. Then when she invests that money, it's the same thing. With that cash flow that comes in, she saves 50%, she spends 50%. The 50% that she can spend, I'm like, go, if you want to just throw out the
right
window, the car window, do it. Whatever you want. She's like, really? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, she doesn't actually do it. But whatever you want to do with that. But what that's done is she separates that money. And like right now she gets a lot of cash. So she kind of has two wallets. One has her investment savings in it. Well, that thing's stacking up, right? And it keeps stacking up. And so like she knows that that money sitting in that wallet is not going to start making her more cash flow until we find a deal. So now like she's gotten to be smart enough. And even at 12 years old, and we started doing this with her when she was like 6 or 7. So she's smart enough now. She's like, if it gets too much, she's like, she gets mad at me. She's like, when are we gonna find the right deal?
Give me this deal.
Yeah. I was like, I got $400. I need to invest this because I could be making this much more per month and per year. And so like it's kind of cool to be able to like see that. And like when we're in the store, like she'll actually pay attention to like what things cost. So like her and I went in and like we don't do cereals at our house anymore, mm-hmm. just for our kids or whatever. So mm-hmm. like. But when we do cereal, it's to celebrate something.
Yeah.
So she did great on some tests she was worried about. Hey, we're going to get Fruit Loops. We'll crush some Fruit mm-hmm. Loops together.
There we go.
We were in the store. She was looking at the milk, and she's like consciously aware of like the prices of the milk. She's like, well, what? We can get this one. If I'm like, no, let's just get the organic one. We'll spend more. Like, it's good for your health. Good for right. your body. It's okay to spend a little bit more, right? It's like, but it's kind of cool. I think that kind of stems from a little bit like about all the conversations that we have. And like when we go to dinner, like she sees an expensive meal.
Right.
Because like I want her to see that stuff. I want her to know how much it is. Because I'm like, hey, when you're 18, 19, when you're out of the house, you're not just gonna automatically, you gotta find a way to be able to get this and keep this thing going. And you know, and so it's kind of cool to be able to have that type of mindset with your kids as well to try to pass down some of that stuff.
Yeah, our oldest is 5 and she's like, just pull out the card, Dad. Yeah. Like what? Like, yeah, that's how it works, but like it's not how it works. But I see what you're doing. But yeah, that's definitely something that I think as she gets older, like let's teach her that it's not just this plastic card that dad and mom can just pull out and everything's taken care of.
Yeah, there's a learning curve that we had to do with that too and all that stuff. But yeah, the time freedom is huge. And then like what I always tell people too is like figure out what the number is, and then back into what you need to do to that. Because again, like so many people want to talk unit count and whatnot. And it's really not about a certain unit count. It's really about, you know, unit count for me when I put it out there attracts eyeballs. Mm-hmm. But it's really not about the unit count. It's about how much cash flow the stuff's throwing off each month.
Yeah.
So that, because that's what you can spend. That's what you can go have experience with. That's what's going to buy you time back. And
I think whatnot. Too, like it depends on what market you're in.
Yeah.
Like Ann Arbor compared to Toledo is totally different from like a standpoint. We were talking just like the price per door per bedroom in Ann Arbor compared to what I can buy in Toledo. Yep. It's crazy. But once you're in Ann Arbor, like there's some heavy hitters there that
for sure
that own most of Ann Arbor and like
Madison was that's
where I want to get to. You know, I want to get to the 1,000 bedrooms.
For sure. Madison was, you're talking like a student housing guy. Cause I was going to say that too. The per bedroom stuff is like really a student housing.
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's how Madison was. Madison until like 10 years ago was primarily like 5 families that owned like everything. And over the last 10 years, there's been other people that have gotten into the game and like, you know, I've been able to break up some of that a little
there
bit.
You go.
But
I mean, when you go to Ann Arbor, you'll see like you drive down by campus and like, there's a lot of like new like apartment high rises being built and it's like
one of like 6 families that are always putting
up. I mean there's 2 or 3 I can think of right now in Ann Arbor that are, you know, when you drive by their offices they got the what they're doing and how they're doing it, and it's inspiring for sure, for sure. But as a little duplex owner so far, it's the task is daunting, but it's fun to think about and how to get it. And
yeah, but like what you're setting yourself up for after professional sports is huge. Like to already again have your toe, you know, like, you know, you can't say, I know you're just kind of being sarcastic a little bit, but like don't say little, like what you've accomplished already is huge.
Yeah.
I mean, there's other guys in the NFL that have the opportunity that haven't done what you're doing.
Yeah.
Right? Because they blew it or they just haven't done it or they've sat on it or whatever, right? And I mean, you're like, you're not just investing money either, which the cool thing is you're actually like learning and partaking in what you're actually doing. You're talking about getting the income statements and getting the rent rolls and, you know, all that stuff and actually looking at it and caring. And I think that's, I think that that's just going to set you up to be in a better situation for after as well.
I mean, they NFL not for long. That's what it stands for. And like,
well, except for you going 9 years.
It's like but even me, like I'm 31. They're calling me grandpa and an old guy in the locker room. Like, old man, I'm like, I got 80 more years of life left. Like, come on. But like in football terms, you know, I'm one of the older guys.
Yeah.
And I know it's not going to last forever. And as this NFL career dwindles down and I gotta do something else.
Yeah.
I could, you know, probably live a pretty simple life and not have to work again, but that's not what I want to do.
Yeah.
And as it, like I said, as this career dwindles down, like the next one's going to have to prop up and I'm already putting myself in that position to be successful, but,
what's the biggest investing mistake you've made so far?
Biggest. I mean, I would say just like not starting soon enough.
Yeah.
Like just that time thing.
Yeah, the 3 years that were you a rookie in 2017?
2017, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean you could have picked up stuff then.
I could have bought some, I mean I bought my mom's house, but like that's
yeah.
It's not really an asset.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean it is, but it's not like an investment really.
For sure.
But yeah, I mean I could have started in 2017 and I have 30 units now or 40 units, so it's
what's been the biggest headache investing that you've had so far?
Probably trusting other people. Okay. I bought a property, a 4-unit townhome last February, 2024. About a month later, there were some bad storms, blew shingles off the roof, flooded the whole one unit, had $60,000 to replace the whole entire one unit. It was finished, getting rented. I get a call from my property manager and she's like, hey, you got a squatter in this unit that we just renovated. And I'm like, huh? She's like, yeah, you got a squatter. I'm like, okay, like what do we do? She's like, I called the cops. They arrested the guy. I guess he's like a lifelong kind of criminal, squats all over Toledo, Ohio, does this thing pretty often. But he broke in through the garage. He was using his dead mom's credit card and card to buy all new furniture. So like he like furnished the place. He's some type of artist because he was like, he like did murals on the cabinets and on the doors and painted like the railings to the stairs. I'm like, you probably could have turned out to be like a decent person with like your art, but you decided to be a criminal.
Right.
So that's probably the biggest thing from the flooding to remodeling the whole thing.
Yeah, that'd be a pain.
To having a squatter.
So you had to remodel the whole thing again almost.
Yeah. I mean, they had to repaint the things. Yeah. There's paint on the carpet, just some small like ticky-tack stuff. And the case just got resolved about a month ago. Nothing really happened. He's on probation for a couple years, and
so he's gonna keep doing what he does.
Yeah, he's like, there's like a restraining order on him, so he can't come near me. But like, we don't live in the same area.
Yeah.
So it's just one of those things that like, I'm pissed because you broke my property.
For sure.
It's not my own house, but like.
That's a big. I'd say that's a headache.
That's probably that's definitely the biggest headache.
$60,000 issue with the roof and fixing it up. Did they leave a garage unlocked or what? Or he just broke.
He broke in through like it's not like a super old building, but like you know like on some garages that are older, they have like that little knob.
Yeah.
I guess he broke in it. I mean, he's a lifelong criminal, so he knows.
He knows what he's doing.
A thing or two.
Yeah. He's not break the rule.
He knows a thing or two. So that's definitely the biggest headache. But I mean, with anything, there's going to be headaches. So
what do you think you have to? From a personal growth standpoint, knowledge standpoint, what do you think you need to take your portfolio and investing to the next level?
I think just being more operationally sound, especially when I take over that side of things, the management side, knowing where every dollar is going, knowing the right rent price to set things at, whether it's renovated or not renovated, getting into the right locations. I wouldn't say that I have buildings in like bad locations, but there's obviously better locations that I could continue to invest in. And I think just setting myself up with like good people around me.
Yeah.
Getting people in my circle that can do things better than me. Like if I'm the smartest one in the room, like
yeah.
I'm a football player. Like, yeah, yeah. But putting people in the position to for all of us to succeed, yep. I think is important.
Yep, for sure.
Joel, what other questions do you have right out of the gate?
Yeah, moving kind of for your 5-10 year, what you're looking at. Yeah, are you wanting to stay in that value add kind of real estate? Are you looking at building? Are you wanting to go new? Still in the multifamily? You want to go into the student housing? Like, what's kind of your ideal?
Yeah, I think I'd love to continue to invest in Ann Arbor. The university is not going anywhere. I think each year applications are going higher and higher. Enrollment's going higher and higher, so there's always going to be that need for student housing. There's just so many different levels to real estate and what you can get into, and I know you've kind of dug out your niche of multifamily, but I was at this NFL business conference. It's called PAC, Pro Athletes Community, out in Scottsdale about a month and a half ago, and learning about the commercial space with triple net leasing and mm-hmm. Just different ways to finance things. You talk about the creative financing, yeah. that aspect. There's a former player, Devon Kennard, who has his own like private lending company for real estate flippers. So there's just so many different things. But for me, I think the multifamily student housing is where I want to kind of carve out my niche and my specialty when it comes to real estate. I could talk about just, I like seeing what I have.
Yeah.
And I think the biggest thing too is like, there's a lot of different ways to find arbitrage, but that's what I try to find is the arbitrage. Cause that again is what allows me to unlock. Like again, if I'm investing something, it's like, how can I double, triple, quadruple my money in a 2 to 7 year span? Like that's what I'm ultimately trying to do. And there's so many, whether it's student, whether it's triple net leases, whether it's multifamily, you know, mine happens, my that niche happens to be, you know, the multifamily, the value add multifamily. You're asking a little bit about, hey, what about, you know, class A? Do you have anything that's class A? And like, we really don't, because right. Not that you can't, because there are ways to find arbitrage in class A for sure. Mm-hmm. But it's like, okay, what is the arbitrage? How do you identify it? How can you position yourself to be, you know, and take advantage of an arbitrage type of situation, right? I think arbitrage is out there in all those areas. I think you can find arbitrage in class A stuff. It's just not what I do. And I've never really paid attention or thought about or tried it. So I just don't even spend time there. But I think that's one of the biggest things as far as, especially like trying to, what's allowed me to really compress time is arbitrage. Finding something that someone finds not as valuable or to be a headache or, right. you know, whatever. And then for us to be able to put, you know, again, 20, 30 grand per unit into the deal, including the interior, you know, and exterior, and then be able to turn around and get a higher rent on that, right? And then be able to refinance out or sell it and, you know, move on to the next one. And that, like, time and time again, like over and over and over again, we've been able to double, triple, quadruple, you know, the equity. Mm-hmm. And then usually too, while I'm waiting for it to double, triple, quadruple, I'd like to get paid.
Right.
When possible, a monthly, you know, monthly cash flow. Now, like a new way that we've kind of been setting up a lot of our stuff is like putting in $20,000 to $30,000 per unit pretty consistently. Like what we just toured the 64 units that are back here, Riverstone Townhomes that we just bought. We're remodeling that whole property. That's not going to pay any cash flow the first probably until like probably October, November, December. So that like first 8 to 12 months we own it, not going to pay any cash flow because we're putting in so much money into it. It's basically like, and I own 80% of that anyway. So it's like, what am I going to put money in and then kind of pay in and just,
right.
It's like, we're just putting money in. Let's get it stabilized. Right. But in my mind, like the way that I think about this is, okay, well, if I'm going to have $1.5 to $2 million tied up in that project, but if we can push the rents and get all this CapEx done, by the time we've had that thing for 12 to 20 months, somewhere in there, we should be able to refinance it. I should be able to get all the initial money that I put in, my $1.5 to $2 million that I personally put in, I should be able to get all that back, go buy the next deal, but still own that 64 unit. And then at that point in time, it's going to cash flow for me still. I'm going to still pay down debt. The thing's still going to appreciate over time. I've been underwriting things so differently. So Chris, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but just from watching my stuff, but like what I'm trying to do with like 30 to 50% of what I buy is like own almost like as like 100% of it if I can, 50 to 100%. Instead of owning a bigger deal with a less percentage, I'm trying to, again, 30 to 50% of what we buy, I'm trying to own a much larger percentage. And so it's like, how can I put that much money into a deal?
Yeah.
Get it back in 12 to 20 months, keep the property so that it then pays me cash flow, and then rinse and repeat.
Right.
That's like kind of been my, like a big focus and a big change in my mindset is trying to keep. And I think part of it is because we've got all these investors in some of these deals, and I've seen all the upside that goes out on a refi and a mm-hmm. sale. And I'm like, man, why don't I just start keeping more of that?
Right.
So how has that changed from when you first started having these funds?
What changes is I think the next, like, how does it, what do you mean, like going forward?
Like you said, you wanted to have 30% to 40% or 30% to 50%. You wanted to own. What was it? You know, five, six.
Like, what did you start with?
Well, with how we're set up, I mean, that's kind of like right from the get go. Like when we raised $10 million, like I own like depending like on the deal, 4% to 10%. Mm-hmm. Right. Now that means I put in 400, you know, to $1 million. Right. Now, so as an LP, I own that 4% to 10% on those deals. Now, what's not included in that is what I'm going to get being the GP as well, because like as we perform and we pay out the preferred returns to other investors, now it's a 70-30 split until all the investors get a 12% return, then it's a 50-50 split, right? So really, if you add in the GP on ones that perform really, really well and hit our business plans, I'll really end up owning, you know, ballpark, if you know, it'll be like something equal to like 25 to 30% of the entire deal. Mm-hmm. But it's through more of performance versus like, you know, just day one, okay, I own this much of it. And so it's kind of a shift in mindset, but I think what it's allowed us to do is actually allow us to grow faster, like starting 3 years from now, 4 years from now. Because if I have that much equity, that's just my own, like, you know, and I think what's going to evolve is we're not going to stop raising money. I just think that we'll use the raising money and to be able to buy a 2,000 unit portfolio. So it's a little bit different type mindset. And so I've been encouraging more and more people that I work with to like own as much of it as you can. Don't give up your equity. Don't give up the equity. And if that means you start a little bit smaller, then just fine, start smaller, but you can double your real estate portfolio every year to 18 months by operating it correctly. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't realize that. Cody Sanchez doesn't realize that.
Cody Sanchez wants you to buy car washes and laundromats, which is great.
I can tell you're liking the Cody Sanchez content.
She's great at what she does. And
I have nothing wrong with her. I saw the one post that Joel posted. I'm like, God damn. She
like, don't be hating on real estate.
Yeah, don't be hating on it. You can operate it like that's any right. other business. And like the craziest thing is in my mind, a real estate operation is actually worth way more than other businesses because of the multiple you're getting on your NOI.
Right.
Like she's talking about multiples on businesses of like 2, 3, 4, 5. Mm-hmm. Real estate's like 16 to 20x multiple on the NOI. Because when you take a cap rate, right? So 5% cap rate is an inverse multiplier. So you're taking it and you're actually dividing that. You're taking the NOI and dividing it by a cap rate. Mm-hmm. So if I take $1 of NOI divided by a 5 cap rate, that's $20. Mm-hmm. So really the multiple is $20, right? We're selling stuff for 5.5 cap rates right now. So that means every dollar of earnings that the property throws off is worth $18-19, right? So that's where I'm like, she says that, but I'm like, really, why don't you buy more real estate and operate it right? Because that's going to be a way better payoff and more value there than these businesses you're buying, no doubt about it, because the multiple that you're going to be able to get.
And I think that's part of the difference in the thought process is you can invest in real estate as an investor, as an investment portfolio, or you can get into real estate as a business and treat it like a business. Right. You know, like the mentality is totally different. Right. And I feel like she approaches it from the, you need a chunk of money to put into it.
She views it as a bond. Which most people do it as a bond. That's exactly right. Where it's just like, hey, I'm just going to get. But that's the thing is like what most people don't realize is that when you, again, like if she's rolling up car washes, well, that's fine. Maybe she hits a 10x multiple one day or something. But again, like my real estate's a 16 to 20x multiple.
Right.
So like plus I'd rather have my tax benefits all day than her tax benefits buying a window cleaning business.
Right.
So like you combine, if I put the tax benefits on there, now I'm probably more at like a 40x multiple.
So what you're saying is Cody Sanchez is wrong.
No, but we're talking a good clip right here.
No, but like there's, like you said, there's more.
I don't watch or consume enough of her stuff, and obviously she's really good at what she does. But when I saw the one clip of what she said, and obviously it's just to get clicks too, so I get that.
Yeah, right.
But like, but my mindset, she could be teaching people, if she really knew real estate, she could be teaching people how to operate a real estate company where they now have the best tax benefits ever. I mean, I haven't paid, I've paid so little state or fed income tax. I've paid less state and fed income tax than teachers.
Right.
And I make in a year probably of cash flow what a teacher takes 20 years to make.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't,
yeah.
It's not bragging. It's just saying,
right.
I use that's the reality. Tax code, yeah. Right.
But like Joel said, there's more, like most people, when they think of real estate, they think, okay, how can I use this to shelter some money?
Mm-hmm.
They're not thinking, how can I grow this?
Right.
Because, I mean, even like me right now, like somebody else is managing it for me.
Yeah.
And I know that once I can take it over, like, yep. I'm going to be able to do, like you said, 5, 10, 20X yep. more than what they're doing, just because I'm treating it like a business, not like I'm just managing something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 100%.
It's your active and passive investors.
Yeah.
You know, and there's nothing wrong with either one.
Is great for some people.
Right. That's exactly
you know?
Right.
And there's, you know, if you're a doctor,
right.
You don't have time to, or if you're a doctor or a lawyer or a garbage man or for a sure. teacher, like, and you want to invest in real estate, like you don't have time to manage it on yourself on a day-to-day basis. And if you want to just have that passive cash flow, you can
but
do that.
But I think if people realized how much true upside there was there, I think more people would be.
Switch and that's the what, mindset.
Like anyone that comes through my masterminds, my,
yeah.
like, Nick Ottoway, who he actually owns some stuff in Michigan. He bought a 24 unit mm-hmm. and I encouraged him. He's in our group. I'm like in our group thing, like the last couple calls, I'm like, Nick, like you need to let go of your property. He was already doing like half of the property management's job on paper. And I'm like, really this other half isn't, you're not going to have double the time taking it right. on. He's like, you sure? I'm like, you sure? I'm sure. And I'm like, and he's really smart with systems and stuff like that. And I'm like, plus if it is that much more time for you, it's only going to be like 2 to 6 weeks because you'll figure out a system. If it's that mm-hmm. painful, you're mm-hmm. good enough to figure out a system
right.
to put into place to take care of that. So like 2 weeks ago, he got rid of it. And he's like, dude, this is unbelievable. He's like, I found out the management company was charging a late fee. I wasn't getting any of that money, which might be theft. But but
sounds like it to me.
But still, it's like an extra, it's like an extra, I can't remember what he said, $500 a month or sure. something, right? And so he's like, dude, thank you for pushing me to do that. And but I think that's the thing is like, there's so few people out there that actually talk about the operations of real estate. And when you operate it correctly, it is like, it can be the most profitable business and the business that probably blows up your net worth and increases it, you know, the fastest over the shortest amount of time. Mm-hmm. And again, like, not that you should want something in a very short period of time. But again, like look at my story. I mean,
yeah.
It's like over the last 13 years, like you look on average every single year, whether the economy's up or down or sideways or whatever, on average every single year, my net worth has doubled
right.
since 2013.
Right.
Now there's some years it went up 20%, but there's also some years it went up 160%. Right. So, I think, like our company, I think we're just starting to scratch the surface on this operation, which is the crazy thing to me. Like over the last maybe like year, and especially now over the last like 60 days, which I've told you and you know you kind of got heard a little bit about that, like what's going on here the last 60 days, like we're just starting to scratch the surface on yeah. the operations piece. And when we get this down, we're like, we have the capability now to do a full rehab in like 3 days on our units. I'm like, if we get that down, we get that down to do it consistently,
mm-hmm.
and we're doing that across 200, 400 units a year, I mean, at that point, like if we can take a property and we buy it for $50,000 a unit and a year later, it's worth $120,000, $130,000 a unit. How is that not better than the window washing business that Cody Sanchez is buying?
Right.
So I think it's just like people don't realize it. I think yeah. it's over people's head or it's just not. And it's yeah. always been historically looked at as like buy real estate and wait.
Right.
Right. It's like I'm like buy real estate, act. Celebrate and then repeat it. I'm not but doing any waiting.
Real estate's always been viewed as a rich man's game. You know what I mean? Like it, you got to have yeah. the money to yeah. put into it.
Yeah.
And then let it do its thing over time.
Yeah. But the crazy thing is you can start with a 2-unit, 4-unit Leonard right. Brady. 2 years, 4 years, whatever, and double every single year.
Right.
So, I don't know.
Yeah.
No, I agree.
Yeah.
But I think, I mean, I think other than just me wanting to, like I said before, wanting to see what I have, it just makes sense to me. Real estate does. And maybe it's not for everybody, you know?
Yeah.
And the Coney Sanchez of the world, like that's what she wants to do. Obviously, sure. Crazy successful.
Crushing it. Right. Yeah.
But for me, it's just properties.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Joel, what else? Anything else you want to add?
You got those questions, or was that the question?
I do. I do have a question. Yeah. The final.
What is it?
Final question from last guest.
Like Jeopardy.
Yep. And this one's a little bit different for your situation.
Okay.
So we might have to kind of tweak a little bit. But he says, if you were to lose everything today, do you have the determination to build it all back? And if so, how long would it take?
Now, do I have the same knowledge? Like I just lost it
so,
all.
So in your instance, your career's in athletics right now. You know what I mean?
Well,
so,
let him answer.
So
let
yeah, answer. How would you?
Hey, don't prejudge his answers.
I mean, athletically, probably not because I'm an old guy, but, you know?
Fair. Yeah. But, okay, so take the knowledge.
You tore your ACL a year and a half ago, right? Or 2 years ago?
Yeah, 2 years.
Let's see, suck it up, Cupcake. You're fine.
All right. Just ask a question. Let him answer it.
Yeah, what do you think?
Ask the question again, yeah, because I forgot it already.
So if you were to lose it all today, do you have the determination to build it back? And if so, how long would it take you?
Definitely the determination.
Yeah.
I was talking to a family at Michigan spring ball. They got a freshman in high school. He was a recruit, and he's like, "How have you like stayed in the league for so long?" I'm like, "You kind of have to be a little delusional. Like, I think that I'm this type of player. I know I'm this type of player, and I'm going to act on it. And I'm going to do everything that I can to prove that and show that." So that determination, I think, is everything. So yeah, the determination for sure. But it's so hard in like athletics. But if I'll take real estate. You know, 15 units. How long would it take me to get 15 units from starting from zero, with the knowledge that I know now, and I'm done playing football and like that's my full time thing. I know there's a lot of caveats right there, but probably a year.
Right.
Just because I lost everything. Like screw it. I have nothing else to lose.
Right.
You know, now as I sit here as an investor, you know. With my wife and 2 kids, and I got a football career, like I can't give all my attention and time to real estate. So it's a little slower process. But if I retired and I had nothing a year, I'll just give it, just go for it, you know?
Right.
I think you said something, the word delusional.
Yeah.
Like, I think a lot of fucking people think I'm delusional. For real. Like,
I think you have to be.
I like around the office, like, I mean, like the stuff that I say and the stuff that I put out there, I think people don't take it seriously at first. And then they're like, then all of a sudden we'll start to break it down and we'll start to do it. I mean, like, again, the ability to be able to do some of these things that I want to do, like remodels in 3 days. Like our team's starting to believe now that we can do it in 3 days.
Yeah.
Right.
But because we're starting to figure out like what the problem is. Like 6 months, like even a few weeks ago, we were still trying to chase down 6-panel doors from Menards and Home Depot. So any Home Depot or Menards anyone went to at any given day within an hour and a half of here, when our guys would go there to try to find more doors, like they would laugh. They say, "You must be with Spalding. You guys already took them all." So like obviously we broke our old systems and processes.
Yeah.
So I was telling you we have like 300 doors right now in the basement down here. I don't know if they're still down there because we're starting to warehouse them at our other properties and locations. But we found out like the stuff that takes the slowest to get here, and we've figured out how to get around that bottleneck where now we've always got it available like the moment we need it, and our guys don't have to go chase it
right
and find out where it is and whatnot. And so like, and that was one of the biggest things that was slowing us down. And the next thing that was slowing us down is labor. So what do we do? Well, we got another like 6 contractors on board with us now that are like jumping ready to go do work and ready to get in there and rock and roll. And so like people are now starting to believe, but some which started out delusional, people are now starting to see, oh wait, there is actually a path here. Right. And so I think the more delusional you can be, but then, you know, backfill it with all the work that you put in and all the studying you need to do and all the, you know, all the things that you need to remove that are, you know, there's a lot of things sometimes, you know, there's a lot of things that we had to remove from the system because it was just, again, we outgrew it or whatever. And if we kept it in as a part of the system, it would never allow us to do it and accomplish it. So like you always have to be, you have to be evolving, right? Mm-hmm. But I think delusional is a great word. No one's really shared a word delusional. I'm super delusional. People mm-hmm. would call me delusional. And I think that goes back a long time too. Like how I you know, trained for football and sports when I was in high school, people thought I was delusional and thought it was a waste of my time and thought it was, you know, whatever. Like literally I missed, I don't remember if it was prom or whatever. Like I missed it. Cause I was doing one of the high school combines that I got invited to. And I'm like, I don't care. I'm going right. to do this. This is my priority. Right. And like my girlfriend at the time was not happy, but you know, and people thought I was delusional. Cause like, well, what's football really going to give you? Well, football gave me a lot. Now I didn't right. go play in the NFL. I didn't go play D1. But like everything that I've done now in my mind is everything that set that up was number one, my parents and seeing their work ethic. But the number two is like football and like what that gave, like sports and what that gave me from a work ethic standpoint to be able to overcome.
But that's like, I mean, you talk about the Musks and the Bezoses of yeah. the world. Like I'm going to start a online bookstore. Probably every person you talk to, you're like, you're crazy. I'm going to right. Barnes & Noble and picking up right. the latest book. And now he's the second richest, Elon Musk, space company, yeah. Tesla, whatever yeah. else he does. It's delusional.
Delusional. All of it's delusional.
Mm-hmm. And not like a delusional, delusional like you see a guy right. on the street talking to himself, yeah. but like right. delusional in the yeah. in the aspect of like everything I do, I'm going to attack it and yeah. I'm going to put my all into it. Yep. And I know if that's the case, like there's no way I can fail.
Yeah.
You might lose some things here and there. You might learn a new lesson, but like yeah. there's no way you can fail. You're not going to yeah. fail by giving it your all and being a little delusional.
100%. Right.
And at the end of the day, it just comes down to the core belief of success.
Yeah.
Like you just emphatically believe that you will win, period. That you will succeed, period.
That's why it doesn't matter what it is. There's certain music you know? Lyrics that I absolutely love because I can tell with what they're saying, I'm like, that's a delusional person.
Yeah.
Like I don't know if you ever heard Mike Studd. He goes by Mike now, just with a period after that. But like it's stuff that I love his stuff because it's there's a lot of like chip on his shoulder sure. type delusional like he you can just I get that message so I love like Russ is another one
you ever Russ is Russ? Good yeah,
so
yeah
like Russ is another one like that's yeah. another one like he in my mindset with his work ethic like he's a delusional
but
I
also
think,
like
I think all successful people are but I love mm-hmm. it when it comes off in music because I listen to those songs over
but
and
no
over
one's gonna listen to the guy or the girl who's like talking delusional and like can't back it up or can't
right.
produce
that,
like
yeah, that's right. right.
You got to talk your shit, yeah. but you have to back it up.
It's
yeah. like you got to.
You got to be bad. You got to put the work in. And that's the same thing, too, is like I'm very much believe in the manifestation, the visualization. But again, if I don't back that up and backfill it with work,
yeah.
nothing's happening. Mm-hmm. Right? It takes both for sure. I mean, delusional, when I was in 20. Whatever, what I can't remember what year it was, but you know, in the late 20 teens, I wrote down some of these goals. I'm like, man, I might not be accomplishing until I'm 50. Like, so I was considering myself to be delusional. 3 years later, I already did them.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it was being able to be delusional and then backfill it with work.
Right.
Every successful person to some extent is delusional.
Cause you could say something like, I could say like, yeah, I think I'm going to get, you know, 20 units and call it a day. Like that's. Now that at 15, five more is nothing. That's yep. one more four unit and or you know a couple a five unit or whatever. That goal is minuscule now. But if 5 years ago, getting to 20 units, I'm like, dang, how am I going to do that?
Yeah, for sure.
Now it's like, okay, how do I get to 100?
I remember talking to you when you had I think it was maybe four units. When
yeah.
You, or when I don't remember when I did the pro players circle, but it's probably around 2020, 2021.
Yeah, 21, maybe a little bit of 22.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, it's just, I think it's a perspective thing, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
You, I mean, 2,100 units 12 years ago, you'd be like, there's no way.
Right. Well, right. That's what I'm right. saying. I mean, I would have said, yes, absolutely, but not by X yeah. date.
Yeah.
Right?
You would have gave yourself that runway of like.
Yeah, yeah. I would have like, oh, I'm like in my mind thinking. I mean, there's buildings. I'm with my wife and we're driving. Like, I looked at that building. I could have bought it for 30 grand a door. But at that point, those 10 units at 30 grand a door was 300,000. I could not conceptualized buying a $300,000 building.
Man. Yeah.
My max was like 190 to 200 for some reason. I'm like, you know, and at that point, like $100,000 more, I couldn't even like think, but like looking back at it now, I'm like, oh man, should have found a way to buy that one. Should have found a way to buy that one. So should have found a way to buy that one. So maybe I wasn't delusional enough back then, but.
That's a good question.
I think I was long term delusional, but not. I needed to find ways to compress time to make.
Yeah, you give yourself a timeline. Right. It's like procrastinating on a project in school. Like, if you got 2 weeks to do it, you're probably going to do it in 2 weeks. Yeah. If you give yourself 2 days, I can type out that paper with one all nighter. You know, so it's. I think it's just how you look at things.
What question would you leave for the next guest?
Oh man. Can I like text it to you or something? I'll give you something for sure.
We can always.
Yeah, it can be off ear. It can be off air too. It doesn't matter.
I'll have to sit on that for a little bit. Okay. I don't want it to be like the, what would you tell your younger self? No, like, that's a cool question.
Yeah, we've had a few of those.
Yeah, no.
Hey, if, by you saying that, one of those five guests would be like, well, wow, Joel just hurt my feelings.
But they were all good answers.
I've been hurt a lot of feelings the last 60 days, so that's all right.
I'm kind of over it. I'm kind of over the whole feelings thing. Just suck it up, guys. Come on.
No, but I'll get back to you on the question, and I'll make it.
Yeah, just text it over and
we'll
get it in. So, all right, Chris, any other last words or anything?
No.
I appreciate you coming on, man.
Thank you for having me.
Here and hope you enjoy the Bucks game tonight. Hope you like Wisconsin. Hope you like the cinnamon roll. Where'd you rate the cinnamon roll that we had?
I'm a pretty hard critic on cinnamon rolls. My thing. I try and I'll go over the country at least and find the right cinnamon roll.
Where's the Stone, Wisconsin?
What was the place called?
Cozy Nook.
Cozy Nook. I mean, perfect Midwestern like diner. Had all the great vibes. Like the older people on like their lunch breaks. Yeah. Like you know retirees in there when we went. I give it like a solid like 5.5
out of what?
Out of 10.
God damn, that's tough. This is a tough rant. I really critic. Like that cinnamon roll there.
Oh man,
I like it warm. That's good. And soft like
it, was
that.
A, it was a solid a cinnamon roll. Critic.
Every time on his Instagram, all the time, like weekly, there's just like a cinnamon roll series he's got going on over there.
We were my wife
like,
and I.
I'm like, damn, that looks like a good cinnamon roll right there.
Yeah, we were in Grand Rapids, Michigan, which is like kind of closer to the Lake Michigan west side of the state. This past Saturday, and stopped at a bakery and got one, and it was like a 6. It was good.
Where's the best one you've ever had?
There's this one in Pittsburgh. Shout out to Generosta. It's in, what city is that in? Warrendale, Pennsylvania, just north of Pittsburgh.
Okay.
They have a fantastic cinnamon roll. And even that's like an 8.
So that's the highest one you've had?
8? Yeah, I would say.
Yeah. So he's delusional with the cinnamon rolls. He's at an 8. He's never had it. I mean, how do you describe what a 9.9
How would you get it better?
Is? Yeah.
Like, what would you do different from your 8?
Like, the perfect thing is, like, the perfect, like, texture, the perfect, like, center. Like, not overly, like, gooey to where it's, like, not done.
Yeah.
But then the outside has to be, like, a little more firm, but not too firm. Not, like, burnt.
Nothing was really firm about the one we had today.
Yeah, overall, it was pretty, And then, like, the frosting has to be, like, on point, too.
Frosting is critical.
Yeah, they throw a little too much frosting, I think, on the one we had today.
And I'm not, like, a big, like, condiment frosting sauce kind of guy. Yeah. I like it, but I don't want it to be, like, drenched in it.
Mm-hmm.
So all those have to – maybe I'll come up with, like, a Dave Portnoy, like, cinnamon roll
I think you need to after this.
Yeah.
Because the best one being an 8, and, like, yeah, that's awesome. He's delusional with this. There we go. Well, when you find that you find that 10 cinnamon roll, I want to be the first to know because I'm going to have to fly there.
In your retirement years.
Because you know if it says 10, this thing's got to be good at that point.
I'll have to let you guys know.
In 15 years when you're no longer playing in the NFL.
15, man. You're more delusional than I am.
Well, then his wife is.
Wife's like, oh, you got like 4 or 5 more years. Like with these knees and – no, but I appreciate you having me on.
You bet.
Really, really, really thankful for it and – love watching. I mean, I've been following you since 2017, 2018, maybe.
Yeah.
And
oh wow,
it's been a fun ride to watch you, and you've been very inspiring in terms
of
getting shit done. So
appreciate that. I'm excited to see you continue growing as well, and excited for the rest of the chapter you're on now and the next chapter that comes after that. And I know you'll crush it too with what you're doing. I mean, you already got such a good baseline for what you're doing, and you already got that. You know, toe in the water as far as, you know, getting started on kind of what's next. And so excited to see what you do going forward too, man. Yeah. Appreciate you being here.
No doubt. Thank you.
Thanks, guys, for watching.